This is the Aftermarket Radio Network. Welcome to Remarkable Results Radio, the automotive aftermarket's best kept secret for personal networking, and thanks for tuning in. I'm your host, Carm Capriato, the automotive aftermarket podcast pioneer, connecting you to industry professionals. Hey, we all know growing pains happen when expanding your business to more locations. It's tough, necessary, and normal to go through it. But wouldn't it be nice to skip some of the known challenges? Well, consider this episode your How to Scale roadmap if you've been considering opening more locations. Listen and learn from a shop owner and one of his directors as they share some tactics to control chaos. Hey, thanks to our partner Napa for providing you this episode. Hey, it's no secret we are facing a technician shortage, and Napa Auto Care is addressing that, the free two-year apprentice program, and you know how much I believe in apprentice programs. Now, they offer a variety of training to produce a technician with three ASE certifications. Hey, you want to learn more? Members can visit member.napaautocare.com. Hey, help me advance the aftermarket and improve the professionalism of our industry. Recommend this podcast to one of your peers. Hey, everybody. Carm Capriato, Remarkable Results Radio, with Kevin Saeed, owner of Integrity First Automotive in Dallas, Texas. Kevin, how are you, man?
I'm doing great. Good morning to you, Carm.
Rami Nazim is here, who is also a director at Integrity First Automotive. Hey, Rami.
Hey, good morning, Carm.
Hey, look, at we've got a multi-shop operation in Dallas, eight locations with an incredible backstory and a lot of great things to share. One of the things, a couple of the things that we hope to cover on this show is how Kevin was able to scale by these strategies or principles, prioritizations, incentives, or as people get it on paper, get the processes and systems down, tracking compliance, customer churn. I love that, by the way. Your business model should work for anyone. You know, it's almost like you guys got a cookie cutter thing going, and automation, just to name a few. So this is going to be a great episode. A lot of learning going to go on here. We've talked before, you know, coming on the show, and I think everyone knows that's my style. I got to get to know who I'm interviewing first. And I found out that Kevin's a New York City guy. I'm 400 miles away from you know, in Buffalo. And by the way, Rami's from Toronto. Kevin's in Dallas. We have this really interesting dynamic going on here. But you're a New York City boy.
Yeah, I had lived in New York for a little over 10 years, Carm.
And you cut your teeth somehow in the shop business.
I did. I was raised in more of an entrepreneurial upbringing, and I went to New York really for academia. I was raised in a small town in Georgia, Atlanta, and New York was somewhat of a different thing. Like I said, went to school in New York, went to university in Buffalo, New York, matter of fact, in your town.
Yeah,
UB. And once I got done with the school, I knew what I wanted. I always had love for cars, and what I wanted to do was something around cars. What better than having my own automotive repair shop? Father was an entrepreneur. Growing up, I had seen him doing business. I had seen him going and collecting checks from his tenants. He was mostly in land development. That's what he did. And he was an investor in automotive repair shops out in New York. Though my dad does not know anything about the automotive industry, but he knew about investing in real estate. So when I would go to collect those rents with him in at the automotive repair shops out in New York, I always felt like that is where I belonged. And I wanted to have my own shop or work in an automotive repair shop. And that's where it started early on, and got out of school, got done. So I went to school, Carm, back up. I went to school for business. So I had a leg above many other shop owners. And I would go and see these gentlemen running shops. We would strike conversations since I was a young guy. And I always had asked my father if he could help me get a shop someday. And he said, if you go to school, you get out with a degree, then I can think about it. Sure enough, I got out, and my father helped me get into a very first shop.
How cool is that? And now, eight shops later, obviously your passion for automotive, because you were traveling with dad as he was collecting rents. I love that. I love that story. And then going to University of Buffalo, which is a great school here. And somehow you got to Dallas. And, you know, I don't think that travel, put it in the trailer and get to Dallas and say, oh my God, what am I doing here? It's irrelevant to the value of this podcast, because you started with one, you had the typical challenges of going from two to three and then saying, uh-oh, we've got to do some stuff right. And then between store three and eight, five shops later, you probably had that outer body feeling like, we better do something to make this place run like warm butter. And so one of the things you did was put it in writing.
Yeah, that's exactly what we did. After move from New York to Dallas, I wanted to have my kids come and experience the same Southern lifestyle that I was used to. Loved it. Don't regret one bit moving to Dallas. Texas was the happening place, and it's right now the most booming place that there is. Dallas being one of the fastest growing cities, I came here at the right time, right place, started our very first shop, put all the experience that I had, years of experience from New York to here. New York was fast paced. To me, Dallas was a lot easier, believe it or not. I just loved it. Felt like I was back home, kind of like Georgia, same people, no rush, Southern values, it's just natural to me. The first shop started doing great, just like you said. Fast forward to once I got to a multi-shop, and that was obviously we had growing pains. Once I got to three locations, I had to write these processes down because I got so busy working in the business, I couldn't work on the business. I was more of a trainer. I was more of a guy who was going around and training the managers all day long. And I knew in order for me to scale, we got to write these processes down. And I don't want to take full credit for that. The brain and the ideas were mostly mine, but I did hire some great help people from this industry, brought them on the team, started creating a corporate setting. So I hired my area managers, operation directors, and I told them, guys, let's put our heads together, and I want to write each and everything down.
The underlying thread of this episode is just what Kevin said. You were putting fires out. You were a fireman, and you realized that you couldn't go on like this. So you decided to put trust in people. You wrote your processes down. Listen, we got to know what we're going to do. It's got to be cookie cutter the same everywhere. But I have to trust my people to get it done. I mean, I think that's one of the biggest problems that we have. Even in single shop operations, Kevin, the owner is so critical as the centerpiece of the wheel vacation. I can't go on vacation.
Oh, Carm, it was even tougher for me. Coming out of New York, I had established my businesses there. So matter of fact, I had two locations out in New York. I had expanded before I moved here. And I was so used to having those shops run on autopilot that once we moved here to Dallas, I had to go back running around even busier than before. It was tough. I could not take days off. I was working literally 7 days a week, day and night. And I knew there and then there's got to be a better way. And I knew, and I would talk to my wife, who's actually also a great help, a great advisor, been as just like most of our better halves are. You got to have a great lady behind you for that actually is part of your success. And surely enough, her and I decided, you know what? You need someone, you need a partner, you need people, not just people working under you that you're training, but you need people who can work with you. And surely enough, after I hired some of these fellows in my corporate and started creating it, things started changing. And I actually had time now to work on my business.
Okay. Trust and verify. Obviously, you hire a group, you trust, you give them trust, but you have to verify. How, as an owner, do you make it auditable so that you know that the things are getting done?
Yeah, great. So just to consolidate, you know, where we started off, you got to identify your system and you want to have a great system. And then you want to concretize that system in writing, as we've discussed. So whether you're a single shop operator thinking about scaling in any setting, any of the advice that you'd get on scaling your business still works for a singular shop. Because essentially, the idea of scale is how to become more effective and more efficient. So after you concretize your SOPs and your processes, and then after you've gone through the rigorous, you know, efforts of talent recruitment and trusted delegation, now is the question of, okay, great, you got everything in writing, you've concretized your processes, you have your standard operating procedures. Now you need to effectively transfer that knowledge and make sure that that knowledge is being applied. So the question is how? How do you audit that the knowledge that you've transferred is being applied? And that comes right back down to step number one, having a great system. Every system that you build in mind, any of your SOPs and your processes that you've built, in the back of your mind, you need to have a process behind it on how you will audit that it's being followed, whether you want to leverage technology or you want to leverage your human resources, right? In, with every process that you have written, there must be behind it a check and balance, a quality assurance, if you will, on whether or not it's being done. So in our case, we leverage both technological means of auditing as well as physical means of auditing. What is a physical mean of auditing? That is having, for example, an area manager. Or if you're, you know, again, a single shop operator, you may be that auditor where you come, you already have a preset checklist of what you're looking for. And whether you're just observing for a few hours, whether there are certain areas in the shop that you're going to observe and write notes, this is how you would audit certain areas of your SOPs, processes, and really your quality assurance. You also have technology on your side, right? So just to give you an example, Carm, we all know the importance of phone calls, right? Our shops get calls, and one of the most important metrics for any owner-operator is your conversion. How many of those calls lead to somebody knocking at your door, coming inside, and you servicing them? Now, you can do the old school way of listening to a bunch of recorded calls, manually taking notes, and hopefully at some point deriving a conversion score. Or there are several tools out there, several softwares out there that will do that for you. They listen to the call, you can identify a conversion, and it will automatically produce the result. And from that, you're able to quickly find out which calls are generating conversions and which ones are not.
So based on what I just heard, guys, Kevin, you've got a geek working for you here.
I don't know if I would want to call him that, but I do want to call him a genius working for me.
Okay, good. A geek genius. But it was so interesting where I know Rami is your systems guy. Rami wants to say, how can I bring technology into a solution, right? That's his goal. I totally respect, admire that. I've always kind of been like that my whole life. I love the fact that why should we listen to a call when a piece of software could and determine for us if what we're doing to teach our service people at the counter is working. And, you know, and there's your accountability piece for success at the counter. Totally, totally love that. Rami, have you and Kevin worked on prioritizing the things that are critically important in the company? Have you used technology on that?
Yeah, absolutely. So we do use project management software, but aside from the tools that you use for product management, one of the methodologies that I employed, I mean, me coming from a software background, was what is known as agile methodology. And although it seems to be a system reserved for software engineers, it is totally applicable for the auto industry, at least from our experience. And what the agile methodology does for you is it allows you to prioritize effectively by tying your task to a specific KPI and goal, or an ROI, a return on your investment for that specific task. So eliminating redundancy, allowing you to prioritize based on the value of whatever the proposition is, whatever the task is, and being open to change. It's got to be dynamic because we all know things change. And so if you are prioritizing based on simply, you know, timelines, like, hey, I put this in my list 3 months ago, must be completed, it's not really the right way to do things. Things will change. You're going to get new information and new ideas, and you need to make sure whatever your method of prioritization is that it's keeping in mind the value of that specific task. And so we use different softwares and tools to manage task flow, and we're completely open to moving things around, and that's totally cool. And we have, you know, cross-functional teams to kind of address that.
Bring us down to reality here. Give me an example.
I remember when we were starting off, initially coming on board, one of the main priorities and tasks was training modules. Training modules that we had already performed on all of the existing staff. We didn't have any new staff that we had planned to hire. So for me, this was a task that could have been moved, could have been reprioritized, right? Of less importance. Why? Because I saw a more burgeoning task, that a priority, which was client follow-ups. I had figured out very quickly that all the client follow-ups that we were performing were manually performed. So a client follow-up, by the integrity first definition, is what you do after the sale. So after you've serviced the client, they've walked out of the door, how you're following up. So we were using many methodologies that were all manual, right? You'd manually call the client, you'd manually email the client, you'd manually text the client. And for me, this was a huge redundancy and would require immediate prioritization, because it would save our managers at least 30 minutes per day. 30 minutes per day multiplied by 6 days a week. I mean, that's a lot of value being lost to a redundant task that we know we could offload to technology. So
Not like everybody did that anyway, Rami.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. That's another thing. You don't have 100% compliance. So now I'm reprioritizing. Of course, we have discussions, we have meetings. I reprioritized the value of updating our training modules, which we know are not going to be used until the next hiring cycle, for a task that I know will have immediate value once we, put it into use.
Thank you so much for putting that into perspective. And you're right, Kevin, you said it. It doesn't mean that they're all getting it done. On the human side, we get so busy, phones are ringing, customers are in need of promise times, the technician is over here, Kevin wants to know this, Rami wants to know that, and we fail to do this. So yeah, I can see how technology can step up and do that particular task and always be looking, can we bring technology into solving that problem? I love that strategy, and in fact, I think it's something we need to adapt more and more, because I think, as you said, Rami, there are the solutions out there that can solve your problems. I mean, Kevin, you've got a built-in guy who this is what he knows and he does. But there's got to be other companies out there willing to help put this stuff together. Earlier, or in our call, you talked about trying to develop extraordinary performance through incentives, Kevin. Can you share your strategy on that?
We had developed some great incentives to get the people, get our employees going, have them encourage them to do well. And really, Karm, this all starts from being a good leader, empowering people, empowering them, developing them. So incentivizing them for what they're doing is obviously a huge part of it. But first, them knowing that you have true care of them in your heart. And that's where we started this from. Now, a lot of these ideas are mine. People who took them to the goal line is my corporate team. Rami is one of them, along with my area manager, operation directors, so on and so forth. We would put our head together and we would put ourselves in their shoe. If I'm working for this company, I'm busting my butt all day long, day to night, spending countless hours in a week for this establishment, what do I get back? And I was like, if I did that for a company, I would want more than just a dry thank you. So we do incentivize. What we had started doing was, back in the days, it was different. And obviously, we've created over time better and better incentives. At this very time, we have many different things in place. One of the big things that we do is profit sharing, where we will share part of our profits with our lead teams, with our store managers. And that has worked tremendous for us. Matter of fact, not many industry, within many industries, not many businesses do, some don't. But just so you know, Karm, we do share our P&Ls with our team. It's about transparency. And you know what? With that, I've created little Kevins everywhere, little business owners everywhere. So that was great when we did that. It was really hard first come to terms with it and understand, because we all had a very split vote on this. Should we share it? Should we not? And then we decided, guys, come on, we're going to grow. We have nothing to hide. To gain their trust, we should share P&Ls. Let's share P&Ls, and then let's incentivize them from those P&Ls. So now we started doing profit share, as I've mentioned before. They take a part of it. Now, guess what? When they go to a place where their light shouldn't be on, they turn it off. When my guys go shopping for parts and they realize that one part store is charging a lot more and they could wait on a vehicle, we're in no particular rush, they will actually go and wait for the same quality part, however, with a little bit better price. And that has been a huge help. So we have many other incentives as well that Rami can chime in, because he's been really working closely with our area manager recently. The one that I've mentioned is the one that actually comes out of my pocket. So I do know about this one.
Carm here. What does Kevin consider a healthy employee churn? Well, keep listening and find out. Hey, it's Carm here to tell you about the best shop management solution for your auto care center, Trax Enterprise. Now, since NAPA introduced Trax in 1989, it's been the industry's leading shop management system out there. Today, Trax Enterprise offers even more of the features auto care center owners want. Things like a powerful interactive scheduling calendar, faster and streamlined workflow, multi-shop capabilities, easy pay consumer financing integration, and more. That means you can count on Trax Enterprise to help drive your success today and well into the future. The tabbed interface lets you open and view multiple estimates, ROs, invoices, and purchase orders all at the same time. You can even place windows side by side, over or under, or drag a tab from another application outside Trax to open another window. One auto care center owner said he loves being able to have 10 to 12 work orders open at once. Enterprise also offers a Microsoft Outlook type calendar, so you can view daily, weekly, and monthly schedules, drag and drop appointments between days and times, and block time to indicate length of work. Punch out to Mitchell Pro Demand is another huge benefit. It provides embedded labor, part, maintenance, and fluid capacities that can be transferred to estimates and repair orders within Trax. Trax Enterprise also streamlines parts ordering. Just one click and it's done. The mobile capture app sold another auto care owner on Trax Enterprise. He said there's no reason to write VINs by hand anymore. You can decode the VIN from a mobile device and send all the information directly to Trax. There are reporting features too. For example, with just a couple of clicks, you can find out how many repair orders you've written in a month. Talk to your Napa Auto Parts store and find out more about what Trax Enterprise can do for you, plus the hundreds of other great things the auto care program has to offer. Kevin, take us to the day that you finally decided to share the P&L. You had a bunch of your team in the room. You passed the P&Ls out. Maybe you put up a presentation. I don't know. And they said, oh, that $1,000 bill, you mean Kevin doesn't make all of that money? I mean, we actually have to do all this other stuff. We have to have a good gross margin. We have to pay our bills. And then there's something left over for maybe us, maybe new equipment, maybe growth. Take us to the day that you made accountants out of your people.
I had delegated this to my operations director. And he was a little bit concerned and he was really making this a big deal. And I was like, dude, this should be exciting. I mean, this is the day people like, oh, what a great company. They're so transparent with us. Something they've been toying with the idea, because we had brought it up to a few guys that sooner or later we will be. Ask us anytime, we'll provide it. Just like stock market, we'll provide. So the day I decided for my operations director to go and speak with every store manager. Now we're talking about 8 different stores. He was a little shaky and to a point where I was like, did you want me to do this for you? And he's like, no, I got it. And I was like, dude, you got it. It's positive. Why are you sweating? Are we lying about anything? And he's like, you know what? You're right. I don't know why. And I was like, go and get it done. And he's like, okay. So he did, surely enough. We did not do such presentation with all the guys in one room. Our structure wouldn't really allow it at that time. What we did was the director visited each and every store individually while his store was covered by the area manager or his rotator. And he sat with that guy in an office with the store manager and showed him, hey, this is the P&L. This is how it works. Do you even know what it is? He actually taught him accounting, because a lot of these guys had never even heard of they did not even know what a P&L is. So to me, it was such a big day, such an amazing day. It turned out really positive. And we told them, we want to create entrepreneurs out of you guys, not just guys who work in the store as a store manager. It worked out great. They loved it.
So happy to hear that. We don't do enough of that in our industry. I don't think you need to be an 8-store chain to do that. I think you can do it with one store.
Yeah.
And we did a great episode. It was a Town Hall Academy with Patrick McHugh, Where the Money Goes. And it is the coolest episode. If anyone wants to get comfortable with sharing a P&L, Where the Money Goes, Town Hall Academy, Patrick McHugh. Please go watch it or listen to it. There's some really good slides that go along with it, so it is also a video. Rami, you were going to make a comment on this?
I think every owner operator should recognize the truth, right? And the truth is no one is going to care about your business more than you do. So any thought otherwise is naive, right? However, you could still shoot for the moon and land on the stars. So we found that not only the incentives we provide, but by being transparent, by getting them involved in the business, right? We are promoting entrepreneurial thinking. As Kevin said, Integrity First is built by many little Kevins. And what's beautiful about that is that these individuals, these team members who we actually call a family, these family members who run these shops, they understand that they actually play a critical role in the business and its growth. And luckily for them, it's very clear to them that they see what happens with the net income line, right? That net income line, whether it's a small number or a big number, they clearly see that we continue to reinvest in the business, whether that's new shops, whether that's new equipment, whether that's more staff, whether that's better tools. We are a testament that we put our funds to good use. So I think you get a respect from that.
I would like to add something to that, Carm. Was it easy? Absolutely not. It had its own challenges because we had different incentives and different bonus structures prior to sharing P&Ls. So when we did approach some of the guys, because you always have those guys who question everything, and they did say, okay, all right, wait a minute now. I guess you guys are now trying to get a one over us. We're like, absolutely not. We're about to create even better businessmen out of you guys because right now you guys are employees. We want to make you guys businessmen. And we would like to do it this way now. What I wanted to add to this was when it came to their bonuses structure being changed a little bit, it had its own challenges. And sure enough, we put our heads together and there were a bunch of guys, collaborative effort, where we answered many questions. And kudos to my team. I honestly did not have to get involved one day. They took care of the whole deal.
Thanks for the reality check there. And there's no doubt, you know, if they see the value in this thing, they're going to work with you. Guys, do you have any technician service advisor incentives, you know, that are away from the P&L?
No, so our lead technicians also receive a profit share as well. They're also involved in the business from a high capacity. Our lead technicians play not just the role of, you know, turning wrenches and handling the complex diag. The lead technicians, they're the mentors for the younger technicians in the shop. We see them, we value technicians the same way we would value, you know, any other member of the team. The store manager and the lead technician for us are both of equal specialization. They both function, they're both critical to the business. One cannot survive without the other. So yeah, our lead technicians have incentives that are tied directly to the P&L as well.
I would like to add something to that, Carm, as well. Besides incentives, we go back to the roots, taking care of your people. You take care of people, they'll take care of you. We all do charity in our own capacity. I've always been taught by my parents that charity starts from home. What is my home? What is my family? Are my teammates. So our employees, when they run into trouble, we've had a few in the past that actually became homeless. Providing them home, helping them with the rent was something that was very important to me. They had asked for a loan and I told them, this isn't a loan. This is for you. My appreciation for your blood and sweat here. Man, I don't go to bed knowing that you don't have a place to stay. Obviously, not only they were a great asset, but for also just being a good, just as a human being, one human to another, I could not see that happening. Besides that, many other things that had happened, what we have done. So part of, I don't want our listeners to confuse that it's all about incentivizing over dollar, because you give them a dollar, they want two. You give them a two, they want three. Just like yourself, you make $1,000, you want $2,000, $100,000. You must be a human first, taking care of your people genuinely from your heart, not just pretended, because if you pretend, they will see it straight through. So that's what we always do that. We've always taken care of our people, the good, the bad, and they've been loyal back. Whoever has come to us, has gotten to know us, just gave us a few days. We're blessed to say they've become our family and they haven't left us.
It's such a great point. We've done so many shows where the owners will talk about knowing the goals of their peoples away from work. and doing everything that they can to help them get there. And out of the genuinity of their heart and the value that they see this team member in the business. When we started, I said, I can't wait to talk about customer churn. And to me, that is, wow, new ones, the ones that leave, and how you manage that. And I'm sure, Rami, you have a technical answer to that, too.
Yeah, absolutely. So customer churn, again, coming from the SaaS business, I mean, that is everything.
Well, let's stop 1 minute and explain what SaaS means.
Software as a service. So Netflix is an example of a SaaS company. They have software, they sell it to you as a service, you pay every single month. And one of the big targets for them is to avoid churn, avoid you hitting that cancel membership button. That same mentality, I see the same thing in any business. In our business, what is churn? It's when we check out the customer, they walk out of the door, they drive away, and that car never shows up back to our shop. That is them hitting cancel membership. I no longer want to work with Integrity First Automotive. So customer churn for us is something that we track weekly. On a weekly basis, we are figuring out how many of the customers that walked in, how much of that car count is return versus net new customers. And then we check it on a monthly level, and then a quarterly level, and then an annual level. And what we do using, luckily, software through marketing automation is that we have touch points with every part of the life cycle of a customer. So from the moment they walk out of the door, there's a certain workflow that they go into, a marketing workflow. After 30 days of not hearing from them, after 60 days, after 90 days, and we kind of do everything we can to remarket, to gain feedback, and to hopefully re-engage with that customer. And believe it or not, Carm, we luckily, again, due to great SOPs, great knowledge transfer, great auditing, making sure things are happening, we have a beautiful, what I would say, a very healthy churn rate. You are going to experience churn. It's inevitable. But if you are on top of the customer experience, everything will follow. And if you have systems in place to gather feedback openly, because you're going to get that honest feedback from some guests. And what I like to say to any owner operator, a bad review or somebody giving you negative feedback, they are actually a blessing, because I promise you, most people, you go to a restaurant, for example, you get a meal that you don't like. The average person's not going to waste their time to tell you what was wrong. So the person who went out of their way to tell you how they felt is actually a blessing for you, because they're revealing. If one person's telling you something went wrong, whether with the way that you greeted them or the way that you serviced them, there are likely dozens of other individuals who had that same experience that would never let you know. So I always thank the people who give me bad reviews or, you know, provide any negative feedback or criticism. I let them know, and I think everyone should, that, hey, first and foremost, thank you so much for taking the time and the effort to let us know how we can be better.
Right on. Great, great insight. You said something that kind of disturbed me, or it shocked me. You said we have a healthy churn rate. I need for you to explain what healthy means, because to me, healthy would mean they're not coming back. It's healthy good, healthy bad. What does healthy churn rate mean?
No, so a healthy churn rate would mean that we have very low churn. Meaning the yeah, so sorry,
healthy positive, not healthy negative.
Yeah, all right. Because the reason I say healthy churn rate is churn is inevitable. You are going to, it's just people move, people find, people get different referrals. You're going to have churn, but it's about controlling that churn as much as possible.
So, what's my goal, guys, for churn? Is it 80% should stay? What's any idea?
I would say a healthy churn rate from my, limited experience, and maybe Kevin can add more to this, a healthy churn rate in the auto repair business, at least in the DFW market where you have a repair shop every corner, would be that a person walking out of your door should return, 6 out of 10 should return within 90 days.
I'd agree. If not more, you got to try for even more, but at least 6 to 7 out of 10. Rami, I would want you to also share with Carm and our listeners about CRM is really what we're talking about, everything. So how, when you joined us and you found all the flaws in the big CRM companies that we use in automotive world, and you came and you laughed at them and you said that, hey, this is a flaw in it. There's a void here, XYZ, and they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing. And I told you, okay, prove it to me. And then you, sure enough, you did. You reached out to those companies. We're not going to name any, obviously. And you told me that you know what? You're going to go ahead and make your own CRM system for our company and control everything. I want you to share that a little bit because that's a big part of customer service as well here, customer retention.
Yeah, I think because we have such a bespoke way of dealing with our guests, right? We have bespoke, you know, standard operating procedures and processes and systems that we do physically in the store. Our CRM should reflect those bespoke systems. And it's very hard to get that from an existing CRM. Existing CRMs are kind of, they tried to be built for one and all, one size fits all. But unfortunately, the way we do business or the way we conduct at Integrity First is not a one size fits all. So, and I want everyone to know, this is not an expensive task by any means necessary. Hiring and outsourcing development, especially for a web application, is not an expensive task. You just need to know what you want first. If you're able to communicate what you want, developers, especially an intelligent developer, will have no problem understanding. So in understanding what we wanted out of a client relations management system, CRM, we were able to outsource development. I was luckily able to contact a contact of mine who actually works for Facebook, a developer there. And we worked together using the APIs we had available to us and created a CRM that was going to specifically tackle the problems of our business and allow us to work within our SOPs. And that's really, I would say that this intellectual property was huge for our business, a great asset to the business. And anybody out there, anyone listening who's thinking about scaling or is already in the process of scaling, if you have the means to create bespoke tools, doesn't have to be a CRM, any bespoke tool, I'm letting you know that there are so many avenues out there to get it done. For a low, it's not expensive. If you think it's expensive or complicated, it's going to take up a lot of your time, that is not true. And I would definitely recommend seeking that because it night and day difference.
Rami, you're using a word I'm unfamiliar with, bespoke tool.
Yeah, so bespoke, a tool that's specifically built for the needs of your business, similar to a bespoke suit. A bespoke suit, they measure literally, you know, the size of your elbow, the size custom. Of your wrist, the size, you know, it's very custom.
Totally custom. Ah, why didn't I know that after all these years on this planet?
It's too cold in Buffalo, Carm.
Toronto's colder, man.
He took a cold stab, snow stab at me. I can't believe it. You spent 4 years here, Kevin, so you know, right?
I do.
And of course, Rami's in the Great White North in Toronto, just 90 miles north of me. Hey guys, let's talk about automation because apparently, again, Kevin, the reason that Rami is on here with us is he's done so much of this for your company.
Yes, sir. So automation, Rami is the guy who actually helped me with it, but I'll tell you a little bit backstory. So Carm, when we started scaling and I got to 3 locations, and then the 4th one, I knew at that very time that all these redundant tasks that were taking time, I had asked Rami. Rami had always helped me from day one, even with my very first job, just here and there. I've known Rami for a good while. I used to go to Toronto all the time. Had become a great friend ever since. And he had known what I'm doing, and I had seen his work ethics. And I had asked him, as hard as you work and as dedicated as you are, could you also find time to do my certain things for me? And he had always helped me with certain things. So after I hired him, I told him to do complete analysis of my company and let me know where are the things that you can make better for us, systems, processes. Now, I have guys who knows the industry really well that you may not know, but I want you to come see it from thousands of feet above, hover above and tell us where do you see issues and then help us with it. Not only he did hovered above, but he deep dived into it and he said, you know what? I need to do a lot of automation for you. And from there, not only one thing, two thing, three thing, he kept coming back to me and he said, I want to automate our CRM system where managers are supposed to be sending text to this system. First of all, I'm going to automate it. So he approached to the CRM company that we had, and they said, well, they couldn't do it. That's when Rami decided, okay, on the side, he's going to start building our own system. He got it accomplished within a few months, actually, got our own system in, and surely enough, he automated that. Texting to the customers when they're gone. Hey, reminders to the customers. Scheduled reminders as far as thank you texts, emails. And besides that, I guess I'm going to let, because there's so much Rami had done over years, I don't want to miss anything. I'm going to let Rami tell us about automation. What else have you done?
I mean, we could get into the specifics. The ultimate goal of automation, this was a lesson I learned from, a previous employer of mine. And I remember one day I was sitting at the office and I was just copy pasting into an Excel sheet. I think all of us have done that. A lot of owners here probably do that right now. They have a task where they're just redundantly taking information from A, copy pasting it into B, and they do that maybe once a week, twice a week. It's a redundant task. And I remember my boss at the time walked over my desk and said, what the heck are you doing? I said, I have to take this information from this website. I need to put it in this Excel sheet. I said, there's technology for that. What do you mean? This is very redundant. He looked at me like I was crazy. Like, what are you doing? You're telling me you're spending your valuable time copying and pasting. You don't think there's a tool out there. We've gone to the moon and you don't think there's a tool that can copy and paste information from A to Z to A to B. And so that was my first lesson on eliminate redundancy. The first thing I do when I see any task, especially if the task is being done on the computer, of course, any task being done, the first question I ask myself, because I don't know everything, is there technology to solve this problem? Is there some piece of technology or methodology to solve this problem automatically? And that is exactly how I dealt with this business. I've never been in an auto repair shop setting, never necessarily even been in a retail shop setting. But problems are problems, right? Systems are systems and processes are processes. Communication is, I would say, one of the ultimate areas that we've automated. Communication from my onset in the company at Integrity First was generally a manual task. It was a manual task, wasn't being audited, not much checks and balances, and it was very generic. The same message you'd send to a client who just a week ago was upset with you is the same message you give to somebody who was really happy with you.
That's a great point.
People know, they can sense from your emails, from the way that you write, whether this is an automated message or a genuine, message for them. And so when working these automated systems, you want to have all of these things in mind. So when we automated communication, I'm not talking about just sending the same message to every single person at the same time. I'm talking about identifying the customer lifecycle, identifying what measures you could put in place to understand where that customer is mentally. Somebody who spent, $4,000 yesterday is different from somebody who came in for a state inspection and paid $25. Are you going to send them the same kind of message? If you are, does that make sense? Right? So automation for me is eliminating the redundant task, but keeping in mind that you cannot just do a one-size-fits-all solution. It's a bunch of if and then statements. If and then, if and then, if and then. Yeah.
So the algorithm is priceless.
Again, as a company that wants to scale, and at some point, you if you ever want to exit, this is a form of intellectual property. Right. So this is an asset.
Zapier. That's kind of the software that you were talking about that can do tasks for you. Am I right?
Yeah, Zapier. So I don't think we spoke about Zapier, but I know I don't actually know if it's pronounced Zapier or Zapier, but I know exactly who they are. And they're actually very useful. Luckily, we were able to build API connections without Zapier. But Zapier is an amazing solution, especially if you have really not, if you're not that tech savvy. It is a great tool. They make it like plain English for you.
Cool. Hey, let's talk about customers and the customer experience. I guess they wouldn't be coming back at your churn rate if they weren't having a great experience, Kevin.
Customer service is kind of where it's at. We've had this whiteboard in one of our conference rooms. I don't happen to be at the location today, or else I would have turned my camera in that conference room. We never erased it. It's actually now etched into the board where I don't think we can even erase it. And it says that we are in customer service business that happens to be automotive repairs. Now, customer service is where everything is at. In every business, every industry, especially ours, customers are coming here with problems. They want to be taken care of. They want solutions. Unfortunately, in our industry, they don't experience the same. At Integrity First, the difference is we always brag and boast about is the customer service. From the point you step into our lobbies, they're state-of-the-art lobbies, and they're great. Sometime I would love to share videos, do a video tour with you, and show you pictures. Female-friendly, child-friendly, great lobbies with friendly faces. That first experience of the customer is the lasting experience. They come through and they see this beautiful, upgraded, clean lobbies, very modern, with computers, with iPad that they could get on, printer station, obviously all those coffees and complimentary snacks, all that. I mean, that's now old. But in our lobbies, we also have massage chairs where customers can lounge and get a massage while they're waiting for their repairs being done. So as far as customer service, it first starts from the person that's up front, the way he greets them, genuine care, education. We believe in constant education of the customer. We learn their story. We provide them with DVIs. That's. I mean, if you don't have a DVI, you're really in Stone Ages. You need to get on with the game. We provide them DVIs. We go through it with details. Now, we have told our managers not to stay behind the counter and call the customer to them. Instead, walk into the lobby and sit next to the customer, stand next to the customer, and approach them instead of asking them to approach you to educate them. Also, take a water bottle with you and hand it to them. All those little things are customer service. Carm, from one of your episodes, I had learned there was a gentleman, I don't remember which episode, and God bless you for these great knowledge that come through these podcasts. Somebody had said that they put thank you cards in their car. And I said, okay, you know, that's a great idea. I heard your podcast. I put it in our group chat, corporate chat, that, hey, we're going to order a bunch of thank you cards that I want handwritten from every technician or at least the manager with the first name of the tech. And it should be in our car. It should be in every customer's car. From that day now into it, I'd say well over a year or more, every customer that comes to our store for even a free air, if they give us the car, they get that card. So customer service is huge from the time they walk in, from the time the way they're dealt with. They should leave with knowing unconsciously that, hey, it was a great experience. And guess what? If they end up going to a different shop someday, then they should think about us. Hey, at Integrity First Automotive, it was just so amazing, so flawless. I mean, there was something there that I felt that I don't feel here. So sure enough, they'll come back to us.
Thank you for letting us know that every once in a while, something really cool happens on the podcast with over 1,000+ episodes. Somebody takes that idea and they implement it. How cool is that? I'm taking the rest of the day off, Kevin, since you have shared that with me. Thank you. Hey, so one of the things we chatted about in the beginning was your model should work for anyone. You know, you have really gotten to a cookie cutter thing and had the technology piece be there that is so easy to scale and implement. Did you grow through acquisition? Did you grow through building brownfields up? How have you grown to 8 stores?
So all of the above. We have really the success story now, the confidence that I've gained. You know how, Carm, they always say, you learn from your mistakes, then knock on the wood, I still have a lot to learn. I have not made a mistake in business for 17 years now. Whatever I've touched had turned into gold. That means our SOPs work. And guys like Rami and other gentlemen that I would love to give credit to, my corporate team at Integrity First, are a huge part of this. They've only made things better. As far as how do we do it, I've gotten shops, Carm, that had gone bankrupt. Some big franchise names as well, actually. I went in, I knew my vision, I knew what I wanted, and I knew what I would be doing. So I get this question asked all the time. When you go for acquisition, what are you looking for? And I tell them, I'm not looking for anything they're doing. I'm looking at what I'm going to do there. And that's all I do. So anyhow, obviously I do take an account. Are there some great big brands there? Is there a development happening? Or is there a Walmart coming there, a new Walmart? But to answer your question, I have gotten places that were shut down and I just went ahead and bought the location out of foreclosure and I built it into a great business where I appreciated the real estate by doing small renovations. I've also done acquisition of a running shop, a mom-pop shop. Our very recent, just a few months ago, I'd say 5 months ago, Saxe, Texas, right, Rami, 5-6 months ago?
Yep.
We bought it from this this couple, great people, such nice people. I love South. I can't boast enough about them. Just such great people to talk to. I approached them, and sure enough, they were on their way out. They didn't know much. And honestly, I saw what they were doing, and I knew there was so much meat left on the bone. And I even told them, what is the reason? Why did you guys want out? And it's the same old answer that we hear, been doing it for so long, don't want to change, did great, this town is growing, we'd like to retire. Okay, great. So I've also acquired places like the As Such, where we took their systems, just made them better. But before we made it better, we also had to bring that integrity touch to it. Karm, we always do exterior renovations. We do interior renovations where we get rid of. So this place, when you'd get into an office, it was like a maze, dark, dingy. We removed all those walls, opened it up, lifted up the ceilings, gave it a great industrial look, and got amazing granite counters, huge counters, like 20 feet long counters with 3-4 beautiful Mac computers or even window computers with thin LED screens, got a backsplash at like a dentist's office. So when you do those sort of changes, it just makes it easier. You want to tell the customer there's a change that has come. And when they walk through, then they expect to change. When they see these sort of things, they know your first image is your last image. So when they come in, they see this place is not like it used to be. Now they expect everything better. Now, as far as other acquisitions, three of my acquisitions were Shaw stores that were shut down. And everybody had their doubts that, hey, you go to that store, they never had cars. And I said, okay, we shall see. I've always had that confidence in me. Again, with the team that I have, even more blessed with, we went in, we put our SOPs, we did some great grand openings, we did advertisement, we did involve the community, we went to local town hall, told them who we are, what we're going to do. Approaching people is very, very important. And we did those. Then I just told you that two of the shops that we've acquired were operating business that we just acquired and we just made even better. And I have not built one ground up. We were in the process of doing one, Karm, but I'm so glad I didn't. And for some reason, God's always on my side, and I'm blessed to say that. Right before the pandemic hit, I had a piece of land we're about to build on. And as you know, and I know, and a lot of our shop owners who have built or who are looking to build know, that when you start getting into the process with the lenders, with the banks, you realize that they tell you, the construction loan is a very different loan than a built loan already. So when I heard all that, I said, okay, you know what? Wait a minute. I'm just going to give it a break. I am not going to build for now. And I'm glad I didn't, because the way that things are right now, Karm, they're just ridiculous. Everything is up 50% or more. So far, all the acquisition have been coming through. Either the stores were shut down, the deals were brought to me by, I have realtors working in a few different cities, and also existing mom-pop stores that actually never even went on the MLS listings. It's just that those realtors brought certain things to me.
Listen, I love your story. I'm going to put a bow in it right now, and there's a couple of things that are on my mind. I want you to come back on a future show, and I want you to tell us how you grew a shutdown location. Because you looked at it and says, I'm not worried. Kevin, you're crazy to do this. I'm not worried. You know, I want to know how you took it from zero to hero.
I'd love to share that, Karm.
And then I also want you to come on Aftermarket Weekly. We'll do a shop tour. We'll take a look at one of your operations, okay?
We'd love to show the shop. We would love to tell people in our industry where we're lacking. And I'd quickly like to share, when everybody on my team, all our team is on the same page, when knowing that our automotive industry is stuck like in 1960s and 70s, and we need to get out of it. And keeping that in mind, we had always taken different industries. My family, most of them are in medical field, and I saw how they do things. So we started creating very much the same thing, the growth and the scaling to 8 locations. And now we're about to get into car multi-shop acquisition. Wasn't just, like I said, it had its pain, but we have learned and put the same processes that other industries like Medfield, they have a way they send you to school, then they have you do rotations, residency, and then you go work for a hospital. So we started applying the same concepts into automotive industry. We just have to smarten up a little bit, and then it becomes a lot easier.
Another analogy to the medical field, which we hear all the time. Hey, look, this was an enlightening episode. I'm honored to have both of you guys on. Kevin Said, owner of Integrity First Automotive, Dallas, Texas, and surrounding areas with 8 locations, and his director, Rami Nazim, who obviously is not just a director, but the technical guy who thinks and do and say, how could we automate that? Well, what a valuable asset you have. Guys, hey, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, Carm, for your time.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.